The following is a home program given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 16th, 2008, in Christchurch, New Zealand.
So, tonight, in this auspicious gathering of Vaishnavas, we are going to read a little bit from the Nectar of Devotion, which is the sweetest nectar that exists anywhere within all of existence. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. So this wonderful treatise, The Nectar Devotion, begins in Chapter 1 by describing the characteristics of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is not some impersonal Brahman. It is beyond the impersonal Brahman. Therefore, it has many characteristics. In impersonal Brahman, there are no characteristics. But when you come to bhakti, the Bhagavan platform, the ultimate self-realization platform, then there are many, many characteristics. And there are six of these characteristics which are chief. And we shall take an overview tonight of these six characteristics of pure devotional service, reading from the most powerfully enlightened words of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 29th chapter, verses 12 and 13, Sri Kapila Dev, while instructing his mother, has given the following characteristics of pure devotional service. My dear mother, those who are my pure devotees and have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation have their minds so much engaged in my service that they were never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in that service. They do not even beg to live in my abode with me. There are five kinds of liberation, namely to become one with the Lord, to live with the Supreme Lord on the same planet, to have the same features as the Lord, to enjoy the same opulences as the Lord, and to live as the companion of the Lord. A devotee, what to speak of rejecting material sense gratification, does not even want any of these five kinds of liberation. He is satisfied simply by discharging loving service to the Lord. This is the characteristic of pure devotion. In the above statement by Kapila Dev from Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual position of a pure devotee is described and the primary characteristics of devotional service are also defined. Further characteristics of devotional service are described by Rupa Goswami with evidences from different scriptures. He states that there are six characteristics of pure devotional service which are as follows. This is a very important list. 1. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Would anybody here in this room find that to be a benefit? To have all kinds of material distress immediately relieved? Of course, none of us here have any material distress, right? This is a wonderful thing. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief, not from only from some kinds of material distress, from all kinds of material distress. Even if it only had that one characteristic, it would be completely worth it, wouldn't it? Just that one characteristic, to be completely free from all stress, completely stress-free. No crying, no anxiety, no frustration, no anger, no bewilderment. All of this negative energy completely washed away. You see? Now do you see why we're interested, so interested in pure devotional service? You see? It's really worth it. Whatever austerities we have to do, or get up early and chant or whatever it may be, it's worth every bit of it. Because the ultimate result is you become completely free from all kinds of material distress. And in addition to that, characteristic number 2 also becomes manifest, which is pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. Do you know what is the meaning of all auspiciousness? All auspiciousness means that which is beneficial for all living entities throughout the totality of existence. Now you see, we learn to find satisfaction by doing for others. A little baby, all he knows is what I can put in my mouth, you see. But when he grows up a little bit, he can share something with his brother or his sister, you see. And a little bit older with the neighbors, and then work for the community, and then work for all of humanity. Gradually, the circle of love expands, you see, from his own mouth to include all living beings. But if he comes to pure devotional service, then that circle of love then goes without any limit, you see. His circle of love then expands to include absolutely everything, because once your love is reposed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is what? He's the root of the creation, isn't he? When you water the root of the tree, what happens? Don't all the leaves and branches become nourished when you water the root? What about when you feed your tummy? Do you feed your tummy when you eat? Sure you do. That's how all your bodily parts become nourished, you see. When you put the food in your mouth, it goes to the tummy. As they say, yummy, yummy, yummy in the tummy, you see. So when the food goes to the tummy, then it goes all over the body. So Krishna is the tummy of the total existence. So when you give your love to Krishna, you see, then your love goes to everyone and everything. So that is the meaning of all auspicious. If you're doing that which is beneficial for every single living entity throughout the totality of existence, you see, that is all auspicious. So the point is, the more you can expand the circle of your love, the more you feel happy and satisfied. The old classic example of, the Ebenezer Scrooge, who was a complete miser. You see, he was miserable. In fact, in English, there's a very interesting connection between the word miser and miserable. Miserable, you see. A miser means he is miserable. So the more we are miser, it becomes very inauspicious situation and very miserable. So the more you can act in an auspicious way, which is beneficial for not only yourself, your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, the more you can act in a completely all auspicious way, you see, that is called Krishna consciousness. Because now what you're doing is benefiting every single living entity throughout all of existence. Because your love is being channeled to Krishna, who is the stomach or the root or the tummy of all of the existence, you see. It's interesting. If you look, if you go into these purports or these writings of Prabhupada, Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, and you start to analyze them, and then you look a little deeper, and you say, why doesn't he just say pure devotional service is all auspicious? Why does he say it's the beginning of all auspiciousness? You see, these are very interesting questions to ask. This is called philosophical speculation. It's not mental speculation. There's a difference between mental speculation and philosophical speculation. Prabhupada makes this distinction. In philosophical speculation, you say, well, how could Krishna possibly be God? How could there even be a God? You see, that's mental speculation. But philosophical speculation is you say, how is it that Krishna is the taste of the water? That's called philosophical speculation. You drink water every day, don't you? You drink water, right? So, did you know that Krishna is the taste of the water? Krishna says, I am the taste of the water. So how is it that Krishna is the taste of the water? You can philosophically analyze it. Well, there are the eight elements, and they're all Krishna's energy. So obviously, it's Krishna's expanded energy, so it must be him. Or another way you can analyze it is the Paramatma is within every atom and between every atom. So how many manifestations of the Paramatma are there in a cup of water? How many different Paramatmas are you swallowing when you drink water? You see what I'm saying? Speaking of water. So in this way, this is called philosophical speculation. So you can say, well, what does Prabhupada mean? Or what is, in this case, actually Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada is translating him. What does it mean, the beginning of all auspiciousness? That means, even at the very beginning, it's all auspicious. Now you can just imagine if all auspiciousness is so incredibly, inconceivably wonderful. And that's only the beginning. It's the first step. You can just imagine how ecstatic it would be when you get beyond the beginning stage. Even at the beginning, it's all auspicious. You see? So now we look at the third item. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Again, note the word automatically. Why doesn't it just say puts one in transcendental pleasure? That would be pretty, even by itself, that'd be pretty good deal. But automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure? What new shade of meaning does that word automatically add to it? That means, it's like we there's two kinds of cars. There's manual transmission and automatic transmission. You see. With manual, you got to push in the clutch first, second, third, fourth, like that. But automatic, it just happens on its own. So, in other words, the devotee does not have to endeavor to be blissful. It automatically happens. You see, Karmi, he has to struggle to be happy. It's a struggle to be happy for Karmi, non-devotee. But for someone who is seriously taking up pure devotional service as their goal of existence, they automatically become full of bliss. The fourth one, and this is a challenging one, it's barely achieved. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved. That means you have to be a rare number. So how do you... The odds are actually against it. It's like how many people win the lottery. You know what I mean? It's rarely achieved to win $1 million in the New Zealand lottery. How many people do it? It's very rare. How many of your neighbors have won the lottery? How many in this room? Well, because we don't buy the tickets. You don't get the point. It's very rare, but it's even more rare to achieve pure devotional service. So that means if somehow or other you've gotten by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, the mercy of Prabhupada's followers, you have gotten the seed of bhakti, the seed of pure bhakti. You should understand You have achieved something which practically is impossible to achieve. That means how carefully you should guard that treasure that you've been blessed with, you see. When you hear from a bona fide spiritual master the transcendental teachings of Krishna, as described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanda Brahmite Konna Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. You know the translation? After wandering through millions and millions of lifetimes, the upper planets, you know, Brahma Loka, down to the lower planets, Patala Loka, up and down on the merry-go-round, the not-so-merry-go-round of the cycle of birth and death, you see, up and down, around and around, to the 8,400,000 species, you see. A living entity who is very fortunate, Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. One jiva who is very, very, very fortunate. He comes in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, and through the ears, he was in the form of the Shabda Brahma, he receives the seed of bhakti within the heart. You see? So, how many, I know you're a gardener. I heard you took some time off work to get your garden soil prepared for the spring coming up after the winter. So what does a gardener have to do when he gets some seeds? You just throw it in the ground and that's it? Forget it. Wasted your money on the seeds. You have to water the seeds. You have to give the sufficient water. And you have to weed also the garden. You see, if you let the weeds come in, they will choke out the plants that you're trying to grow. The weeds are very, they grow very fast. They're like monsters sometimes, the weeds I've seen. So, if one finds that I have been so fortunate to have the seed of bhakti planted in my heart by a bona fide spiritual master, I have heard from a bona fide guru, and now the seed of bhakti is implanted in my heart, that is this extremely rare thing that I have achieved, if one has achieved. So if one finds oneself in that very rare, most rare situation, then how carefully you should tend to the garden of your heart. By regularly chanting, what is that watering process? Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. People say, well, why 16 rounds, you know? Why 16 rounds? 16 rounds is the minimum amount of water to keep the creeper alive. 16 is the minimum. If you underwater a garden, it will dry up and die. You see, the plant will dry up and die. So 16 rounds is the minimum to keep the plant healthy, thriving. So if we will water that garden, and we will protect it from the weeds of illicit sex life, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, and the mad elephant of Vaishnava Parad, you see, by building a very strong fence. Would you want an elephant trampling your garden? Have you ever seen an elephant in the zoo? The big elephant? Big, huge elephant, you see. If an elephant comes to your garden and they have big feet, that is fit as that big, big, huge foot. The bottom of his foot is like that, you see. You go, boom, you finish your garden, you see. In 1 minute, all your plants will be finished if he comes into your garden. So if you ever make a garden and there's elephants in the neighborhood, make sure to build a very strong fence so the elephants can't get into your garden, you see. And we are living in a neighborhood called the material world where the elephants are everywhere. Vaishnava aparadis are everywhere. In our heart, so we have to be very careful. That tendency to Vaishnava aparad is very, very, it's very, very dangerous thing. The divine and demoniac natures are there in all of us. Combination, there's a whole chapter in the Gita elaborating these two natures, the divine nature and the demoniac nature. So, as neophyte devotees, we're battling it out with these two natures, you see. So we need a very good fence. You don't want those elephants trampling on your garden. No, ruin it. So, In this way, we have to understand, because it's so rarely achieved, we don't want to miss this opportunity, how many millions of lifetimes we've gone through to get this opportunity for pure devotional service. Do you remember all the millions of lifetimes you've had when you were an elephant, when you were a lion, when you were a bear, or a snake, or a demigod? Do you remember all those births? No, you don't remember them. You see, none of us do. She doesn't remember. She says, no, she hasn't remembered them. We do not remember, you see. We have forgotten. We have forgotten these things. That's, some people say, well, why Krishna doesn't let us remember them? Why doesn't he do us a favor and help let us remember all of them? Because certainly that would be helpful for our liberation. Some people argue like that. But you know what? Those people who were in the World Trade Center when the terrorist attack came in 9/11 and survived it, they have horrible nightmares. And they have to go to psychiatrists to try to free them from what is called post-trauma stress disorder. So I can tell you this, if we remembered our past lifetime, if those memories were still there, we would be the most paranoid, schizophrenic, neurotic, whatever you want to say, words, you know. We'd all be suffering from heavy-duty cases of post-trauma stress disorder. That we have forgotten those previous lifetimes when we were a snake, when we were a tree, when we were an alligator. Rah! You see? That is Krishna's mercy upon us, that we've forgotten all those lifetimes. That's his kindness. We've forgotten those things. We got a fresh slate. We can be a little peaceful in the mind now, you see. Because we don't remember all the horrors we went through in the lower species. What to speak of the hellish planets, you see. So this is a very special blessing of Krishna to give us this forgetfulness of these all those millions of births we went through. So we should understand from the scriptures, from the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, how rare it is to have this opportunity for pure devotional service, and therefore we should take it most seriously. That's all we want the children. I'm so happy the children are listening very nicely tonight. We want them from the very beginning. This is our Vedic culture from the very beginning. Everyone was. Even in the womb, Prahlad Maharaj heard, you see. There's no such thing as, oh, they're too young. That's never a case. Even in the womb, they can hear this knowledge and become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So we must train all of our members, from little tiny children all the way to the old senior citizens. Everyone should learn to sit and hear these wonderful teachings of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And in this way, everyone will become very realized in this knowledge and will achieve the perfection of going back to home, back to Godhead. So now we will move on to the fifth characteristic of pure devotional service. And this one has some interesting subtleties of meaning. Those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. Now, we could easily say they deride liberation. Of course, we're talking about here about Suyuja Mukti. We're not talking about the liberation of going back to home, back to Godhead. We're talking about the liberation, impersonal liberation. You see, the impersonals, they want to merge with God. They just want to merge into God, you see. So, it says here, those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. That means liberation, of course, is deridable, but even the conception of liberation, even the thought of it disgusts them. You understand the point? Not only is the thing itself disgust them, but the thought of the thing also disgusts them. Even they deride even the conception of liberation. Even the thought of it is extremely painful and, you know, disturbing to them. You can say, well, I thought they were ditta. They were undisturbed. How they could deride something. But devotional service is not like that. There are feelings, there are emotions in devotional service. And being disgusted by the thought of merging into the Supreme, that is a wonderful emotion for a Vaishnava. To find it disgusting and repulsive, that's very good, you see. It's not that everything is just bland for a devotee. He has feelings, he has emotions. And the whole idea of merging into the Supreme is like, you see, it's very disgusting for Vaishnava. Those who've gotten a taste for pure bhakti, it's a very, very disgusting thing. So now we come to the sixth item. And this one is really, really sweet. This is the most nectarian of them all. Rupa Goswami saved the best for last on his list. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Just the idea of attracting Krishna, of course, it's amazing. Because Krishna, usually we talk the other way, Krishna is all attractive. He's the one who attracts everything to him. But pure devotional service is so powerful, is so amazing, that you can attract that person who attracts everyone to him. That means pure devotional service is more powerful than Krishna. And Prabhupada confirms this statement. He says that Krishna is ajita. He is unconquerable. But he becomes what? He becomes jita, or conquered by his devotee's love. You see? So this is the amazing characteristic of pure devotional service. You can conquer God. You can conquer over the Lord. You see? By your love. So here we are teaching, we have a class, this Hare Krishna philosophy, we are teaching our members how to conquer God, how to become more powerful than God. See, the Mayavadis are busy trying to merge with God, and we're teaching you how to become greater than God. Prabhupada actually said like that. He said the Mayavadi, they want to merge with God, and we want to become greater than God. That is our philosophy. Of course, it's in a humble mood of service, but the fact is that pure devotional service does actually attract Krishna. And a side note in this connection, Prabhupada told us in London on Radhastami, he said that actually, the method of attracting Krishna, here's the insider secret of how to attract Krishna. You pray to Radharani. My dear mother, Radharani. Some ladies in our movement have been objecting to being called mother. They say, oh, this is not very respectable to be called mother. Just call us Prabhu, please. You know, mother is, they don't, but Prabhupada, he said that he told us how we can address Radharani as mother. So what is the difficulty? If Radharani is mother, and she's, who can dream of being anywhere, you know, anywhere near Radharani's position? If she is mother, it's a very, very exalted title to be called mother, actually. So Prabhupada said, my dear mother, Radharani, please tell about me to your Krishna. You see, Krishna, he only knows Radharani. Radharani is everything for him. Simply his Radharani, that's all he knows. He knows nobody. Just imagine, when Radharani cooks, she never uses a cookbook. And she never makes the same preparation twice. Never. Every time she cooks is a totally unique preparation that Krishna has never, ever, ever tried before. Every time she cooks, it's different. So nobody can attract Krishna like Radharani. But you know what Radharani does? If someone begs Radharani, my dear mother Radharani, please tell about me to your Krishna, then Radharani will say, oh, my dear Krishna, Shyam Sundar, just see, here is a devotee. Look, he's a better devotee than me. He's a greater devotee than me. Prabhupada said, she will recommend to Krishna, he is greater devotee than me. And so you can imagine what Krishna will think. Radharani is saying, oh, my dear Krishna, here is someone who is greater devotee than me. Krishna will be very interested. Oh, better than you? Let's see who this devotee is better than you. Yes, So in this way, Radharani, you see, she always wants to push everyone forward to Krishna. So if we want to attract Krishna, we go through the mercy of Radharani. And how do we get Radharani's mercy? Do you know how we get Radharani's mercy? Before we chant Krishna's name, what do we say? Hare, you see. Hare is addressing Radharani. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, you see. First we address Krishna. I mean, we address Radharani by calling Hare, which is the vocative form of Hara, Mother Hara. In Sanskrit language, when you speak of someone, you use a certain ending, and when you address them, it is a different ending. So we say, we talk about Radharani, but if we address her, we say Radhe, hey Radhe, you see. So we can talk about Mother Hara. If we want to address her, we say Hare in the evocative form, calling out to the person. It's a different form than describing them. So the Hara becomes in the evocative form, calling out to Hara, we say Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then Prabhupada wraps up this first little section here. He says, Krishna is all, he's describing this sixth item. He says, pure devotional, Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even him. This means that pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna himself because it is Krishna's internal potency. So, pure devotional service is a very, very powerful thing. By pure devotional service, you become more powerful than any yogi, more powerful than any demigod, actually, by pure devotional service. So, if you have an opportunity to engage in pure devotional service, understand it is the greatest blessing that you could ever have achieved in millions and millions of lifetimes. Even being in the position of Brahma, Indra, or anything like that. It is the greatest opportunity that one can ever have. So, since Prabhupada has blessed us with that and his followers have blessed us with that, let us now take full advantage of this opportunity and achieve the supreme perfection of existence, known as Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service. So, now I can ask if there's any questions. Any of you children have questions? I'll give you first preference if you have questions. I'll let you ask first.
Maybe you should ask them questions.
Hmm?
Maybe you should ask them questions if they were hearing or not.
No, I don't want to do that. Any questions? Yes. What is she saying?
Can a neophyte devotee for a moment perform pure devotional service and attract Krishna?
Can a neophyte devotee perform devotional service for a moment and attract Krishna?
Why not? If you serve very nicely, why not?
Just for a neophyte devotee. So will it be lasting?
How was that word?
Neophyte devotee. Will it be lasting if he does for a moment?
Lasting?
Yeah. If he attracts Krishna, will it be lasting?
Will it be lasting?
Yeah.
You see, actually, pure devotional service can also be achieved within a moment, Prabhupada explains. I mean, generally it takes a whole lifetime of practice, but there's no set thing like when you go to college, you have to go, it takes 4 years for your degree. It really depends on how deeply you dive into the ocean of bhakti. One can very quickly achieve pure devotional service. It can take millions of lifetimes. Depends on your intensity of practice. How much greedy are you for pure devotional service? Is pure devotional service your only desire, you see? If we become intense like that, then quickly we can advance on the path of bhakti. You don't have to wait, well, I have to go through so many years, you know. Not like that. You simply have to you have to be very intense in your own desire to achieve pure devotional service. And then very quickly you can advance on that pathway. The Prabhupada gives the example of Kadvanga Maharaj. You may have heard that example. He was a very powerful king on the earthly planet. And the demigods, they don't have it as great as we might think, because sometimes the demons come and overpower the demigods. In the heavenly planets, the demons invade the heavenly planets and take over. So they were attacking the heavenly planets and they needed some help. So this Kadvanga Maharaj, he was a very powerful king. Now pay attention here. You pay attention here. Kadvanga Maharaj was a very, very powerful king. So powerful, the demigods took his help to fight off the demons. And he fought very valiantly for many, many, many long years. And he was successful in repelling the attack of the demons. And the demigods said, "Oh, thank you. We're so grateful to you. You have saved us from these demons. Now, with any benediction you like, we'll give you whatever you want within our powers. We'll give you anything you want." He wasn't just king, Raja, he was also Rishi, Rajarshi, he was saintly king. So he very intelligently said, "Just tell me how much longer I'm living. That's all I want to know." And they said, "Oh, actually your death is coming just now." He said, "Thank you very much." He completely took shelter of Krishna and achieved pure bhakti immediately. So there's no time limit. It's simply according to our own intensity of how much we're willing to dive into pure bhakti without any other motive. You see, ahaitaki apratiyata yagyatmu supersedati. How eager are you for unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service? Krishna will reciprocate according to your eagerness. Lalayam, you see. How much eager are you for pure devotional service? And that will determine everything. So a neophyte, if he or she is very eager, they can very quickly achieve pure devotional service. It's simply your own, how much greedy you are. Even we see, pure devotional service is sometimes achieved by materialists who are greedy. It's a very interesting story. Prabhupada told, there was one thief. You know, they're always looking for somebody to rob. So, there was a Bhagavad discourse going on. So he came in, there's all these, you know, people, just like here you all are sitting. And so he said, "Look, all these people, they look like they're pretty well-to-do. I'm going to check out the scene here. Maybe I can, you know, pick some pockets or something in this assembly." He walked in where the Bhagavatam class was going on, you know. And he heard the preacher heard some amazing words from the mouth of the preacher. The preacher said, "There is a forest called Vrindavan, and in that forest there's a little boy named Krishna who is loaded with all kinds of valuable jewels. He wanders all alone in the forest." And the thief said, "A little child with no parental supervision, wandering all alone in the forest, loaded with valuable jewels. Where is that forest? Vrindavan? Oh yeah, that's up near, you know, that's in North India, Vrindavan Forest." So he said, "I'm going to go there, I'm going to steal his jewels." And when he said it, "One night I'm going to become a millionaire." He was so fired up, he was so greedy, that he was going to go there and rob this little boy named Krishna. That was his determination. Prabhupada tells the story in a lecture. So he headed out across India, you see. "Ah, I can't wait to find that little boy Krishna. Boy, I'm really going to rake it in, you know, get all his jewels, you know. Maybe I'll leave him a couple, but I'm a... So anyway, he was going all the way across India. He came to Vrindavan, and you, in Vrindavan area is huge. How many of you have been to Vrindavan? What is the, how many square miles is Braj Mandal? 60. It's a huge area. I know when we go from Vrindavan town to Kamyavan in the jeep, I mean, it takes hours and hours to get all the way over to Kamyavan. You been to Kamyavan? It's the far end of Braj Mandal. And to go there, that's where they it's really an amazing place. Krishna's footprint is right there on the top of the mountain. We went there and climbed the mountain, and there's Krishna's footprint still in the rock. So it's an amazing place to go to Kamyavan, but you got to go for hours and hours and hours in the jeep. Can you imagine walking Braj Mandal? The whole thing of Braj Mandal, trying to find Krishna. So he was doing that for days and days and weeks. He was wandering, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? I want those jewels. I want those jewels. You see, wandering. And then one night, Krishna very mercifully revealed himself to this thief who was simply after the jewels. He didn't want bhakti. He was just after the jewels. And so the thief said, "Oh, Krishna, you're loaded with so many valuable jewels. Do you think you can give me some?" So Krishna, Prabhupada explained, he played the role of being the son of Mother Jasoda. He said, no. Mother Jasoda will scold me. No. Afraid of his mother's scolding, you see. But the thief said, no, he said, the thief implored, no, he asked again. But actually, just by that association with Krishna, even though he had all material motives, he said, he became completely purified, became a pure devotee. Then Krishna said, "All right, you can dance." So if even a thief who is greedy to rip off Krishna, to rip off his jewels, to become a wealthy man, can achieve pure bhakti, what to speak of someone who is trying to consciously achieve pure bhakti? You see? Simply you must become intense in your desire for pure bhakti, that's all. At least as intense as the thief was. Yeah. Yes. You were a demigod, Manaji. You were even Brahma. Did you know that? Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, the first birth we take in the material world is we enter as Lord Brahma. Each and every one of us was Lord Brahma. Even Ohana was Lord Brahma, you see. Everybody was Lord Brahma at one time. Did you know you were Brahma?
I still believe it.
We were actually Lord Brahma, and then we could have gone back to Godhead directly from our position as Brahma, but then we wanted to check out being Indra, and we just gradually came down, you know, became all the way down to Indra Gopa, a germ, you know. Well, I tried to enjoy in this way, I wasn't happy that way, so let me try it this way, and that way, and this way, and that way, and this way, and that way, for millions and millions of births, trying to enjoy this way. And you know what? We were never satisfied. Mick Jagger was right. I can't get no satisfaction. No matter where, how you tried, you know, as a demigod, as an alligator, as a beggar, as a king, you know, we've tried so many ways to be happy. Do you know you were a big king, Thomas? You were a big king? You see? Your crown and everything. We tried everything, you know. We've tried everything. I've been a man, I've been a woman, I've been a eunuch, you know, I've tried everything. And I never got satisfaction, you know. We never got satisfied in any position, you know. So, now we simply must take to bhakti, Krishna bhakti. That will satisfy pure devotional service.
So, if we came as Brahma or whatever, then
obviously we weren't doing any service.
Huh?
We were just materialists, like,
you say that even, we may have been Brahma or whatever, so we have been only materialists.
Yeah, we are not a pure devotee Brahma. We are materialistic Brahma. Our Brahma we have now is pure devotee. He gave us Brahma Samhita. We weren't pure devotee Brahmas. We were rascal Brahmas. Questions more? Is everybody satisfied now? Ready for pure bhakti? First characteristic is pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress.
That is not apparent to most of us. You see, there is even stress.
You're not experiencing relief from all kinds of material distress?
No, while you're performing service, there are all sorts of difficulties, oftentimes.
Difficulties?
Devotional service, there are all kinds of difficulties.
Yes.
Due to our mind, our ego, and things like that.
You're feeling stressed out?
Well, sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that means we are still in a neophyte platform. For those who actually come to the platform of pure bhakti, they derive ever-increasing pleasure from no matter what type of service they may be doing. As long as they're serving Krishna, that's all that counts. So we're not on that platform. We're striving to achieve pure devotional service right now. We're not on that level yet. If we're feeling distressed from doing service, that means we're not on the level of pure devotional service yet. Yes.
What brings us to pure devotional service?
What brings us to that?
Yeah.
That's achieved by the mercy of a pure devotee. That's why we have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Because that you can't do it on your own effort. It's by the mercy. What do we sing every morning in Girvastakam? Yasha prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasha prasada nagati katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, nobody can make any spiritual advancement. So to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, that's essential to achieve pure devotional service. Absolutely essential. That's why Rupa Goswami explains elsewhere in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Adhao Gurashvayam. The very first step in bhakti is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Because by his grace, you can achieve pure devotional service. By pleasing the spiritual master, you can achieve pure devotional service. So all you have to do is please him. And then that comes to you, that pure devotional service comes to you automatically, just by pleasing the spiritual master. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very good.
So my question is that sometimes many disasters have happened, so there are so many doubts that taking shelter of the spiritual master.
Yes, yes. Yes, I had a doubtful experience also. When I went to India, you know, I did my normal thing, and as we were heading on to Malaysia, I wanted to get my rupees changed into U.S. dollars, and I handed them in at the window and some 500 rupee notes, and then he handed the U.S. dollars to me with one rupee note back. He said, "This one's counterfeit." I'd been ripped off. Somebody gave me a counterfeit 500 rupee note. So I could say, "Oh, I've been ripped off by a counterfeit. I'm not going to come back to India anymore, you know. I'm not going to deal with rupees ever again. I've been given a counterfeit note. I was ripped off." You see? So what does a counterfeit note mean? It means it's an imitation of the real note. So if there's some bogus guru, you see, just like I was ripped off by a bogus guru, I took diksha from Maharishi Mahesh Bogi, Mahesh Yogi. You know what it cost me? The equivalent of 1 month's rent I paid to that rascal. For I had a little diksha in a motel room, can you imagine? One of his assistants gave me my Maharishi Mahashayogi diksha. And they gave me my mantra, aing, 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 aing. And I chanted it till I was blue in the face. But it didn't do a damn thing for me, except made me more miserable, you see. And there was no money back guarantee. Oh boy, was I ripped off. So I could have said, the hell with this guru thing, you know, this rascal ripped me off. But no. Just because somebody, I mean, we even see in the Vedas, you know, great devotees, great personalities were misled by bogus gurus, and they saw through it, and they rejected their bogus guru. In fact, one of the great Mahajans, Bali Maharaj, we celebrate his name in that wonderful shloka, spoken by Yamaraj himself. You know that shloka? Svayambhur nadada shambhu kumaro kapilo manu. Pralado Janako Bhishmo Balir Vayasakirvayam. That name Bali Maharaj is in that beautiful verse of Bhagavatam. And this Bali Maharaj, how did he become a great Mahajana? By rejecting his guru. He became a great Mahajana because his guru was bogus. His guru, Shukracharya, always told him, worship Vishnu, worship Vishnu, worship Vishnu. But then when Vishnu came disguised as the dwarf Brahmana, the guru said, don't worship Vishnu. He'll take everything away. You see, Bali Maharaj, he was, that Shukracharya, he was getting very nice guru dakshina. His disciple, he was a powerful king. You can imagine how much dakshina he was getting. So when guru understood by his power that, Krishna will take away everything and my dakshina will be finished, he said, don't give him anything. So Bali Maharaj said, what is this? Vishnu has actually come. Guru has always taught me according to Vedic principle. And now Guru is violating Vedic principle. The hell with this Guru. I give him up, you see. And he became a great Mahajana by rejecting his Guru, you see. So if one's Guru is, even if he gave you proper guidance, if he reverses his position, he gives you bogus guidance, then you can reject your Guru. You see, but that doesn't mean that you reject all the gurus. I still go back to India and I still get rupees, you know. I didn't give up on India. Even though I got ripped off for 500 rupees, actually one of my disciples wanted it as Guru Prasad and she gave me money for it. So it kind of worked out, but anyway, that's another thing. My 500 rupee note counterfeit. But, I still go to India and I still deal there. So one just has to understand if there's a counterfeit guru, that means he's simply imitation of the real guru. If there's not a real guru, there cannot be a counterfeit guru. So it's not a difficult. You simply have to learn to distinguish between the real guru and the counterfeit guru. Then you're okay. Any other questions? Yes.
How do you distinguish?
Yes. Prabhupada's books is very simple. You have to become very learned in Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada is giving us the perfect vision to clearly see who is who. See, find that person who is a living embodiment of these books. Study that person for some time. Don't just make a whimsical judgment. But study that person for some time. How does he speak? How does he live? What does he do? What are his attitudes? How does he deal with people? How does he feel about, you know, everything? Study that person. See, is this person is he truly a living embodiment of Srila Prabhupada's books? You see, if you find a person like that, then you've found a bona fide spiritual master, you see, where you can take siksha. And if you're not initiated, you can also take diksha from that person. You have to find someone who's a living embodiment of these teachings. 24/7. Not, you know, not that he takes a day off to go to the movies or go to, you know, surfing or something like that. He's totally absorbed in this. His whole life is completely absorbed in Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Yes.
What is the medicine for attentive chanting?
The what for attentive chanting?
What is the medicine for
the medicine?
Chanting.
Yes. The medicine that you have to take for attentive chanting is very nicely described in the Bhagavatam, first canto. In other words, if you're going to chant attentively, you can't do it mechanically. You have to actually have a taste, you see. If you have a taste for the holy name, then automatically your chanting will be attentive. So how do you get a taste for chanting? This is described, shu shu sho shudadana sho, vasudeva kataruchi, syan mahat sevaya vipa, punya seva nakirtanam. By serving those devotees who are completely free from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. So you simply have to find devotees who are pure, don't have any material motive for doing devotional service, and then serve those devotees. If you do that, then you will get a very, very strong taste for hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna. And your chanting will automatically become attentive.
How can you distinguish?
I just answered him. Just what I told him. You have to read the books and see who is a living embodiment of these teachings. You have to read Prabhupada's books and understand them very well by careful study and analysis from many angles of vision. And then you have to see who is actually a living embodiment of these teachings. Who is constantly absorbed thinking, speaking and acting 100% in harmony with Srila Prabhupada's teachings in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Those sort of persons, they are bona fide spiritual masters. If you will serve such pure souls, then you will definitely get a taste for hearing and chanting. Very powerful, Dave.
But those pure souls come to Christchurch very rarely. What about from day to day?
Actually, it only takes one moment's association. That is stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Kai, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hai. You know what this Lava Matra is? 1/11th of a second. Even 1/11th of a second with a qualified sadhu, that 1/11th of a second can give you all perfection. So the quantity is not as important as the quality. But that qualitative contact with sadhu, then you can actually, that becomes a permanent asset. Because, I'll give you an example. We were studying the Bhagavatam the other day, and this devotee, he was remembering some pastime, some experience with the Lord that he had or he'd heard about. And through that remembrance of the same exact experience, he was going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So even if he only had the sadhu's association briefly for one moment, that moment is now your permanent asset. It is residing within you. And you can go within that moment's experience deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper for all of eternity. Just like how much association I had with Srila Prabhupada. Not that much. Whatever little I had, I'm like a cow chewing its cuds, you see. I simply go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into those moments. And that way, I'm always living with Srila Prabhupada at every minute, you see. Because I'm going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into those moments when Prabhupada personally instructed me, when he looked at me, when he asked me a question or gave me a personal instruction. So in this way, the quality is really where you will find your connection. Even one moment's association with a great saintly teacher, if you can keep that in your heart and go deeper and deeper into them, then you will never lose his association. You'll always have it at every minute. Any other questions? Yes.
How about serving the sadhus, who we may not see them as perfect, mm-hmm. but they are attempting to serve Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, anyone who is sincerely trying to become pure, they are accepted to be, they are considered as pure. And their association also bestow great benefit. Actually, Prabhupada said like that one time, walking in Golden Gate Park in the early days. Some devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, they knew that Prabhupada was a pure devotee. They said, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? Let's see how liberal was Srila Prabhupada. Of course, they hadn't been all the scandals yet, but you know. But the fact is, anyone who's sincerely trying, just like I see you people as pure devotees, you see. You're sincerely trying to become, to serve Prabhupada's mission, keeping the spirit alive here, in spite of all the ups and downs through the years. I see you're keeping the fire of bhakti burning brightly here in Christchurch. So I see you all as pure devotees. And I'm feeling purified by your sangha. Anyone else? I don't want to mob you. I'll let him have a chance.
Just wondering why. I heard what you just said about like everyone being pure devotees and that, but for one to like actually be really advanced, like how long does that take?
6 week course.
Huh?
Talking about a pure devotee. So how long does it take to become the advanced?
I answered the question in great detail tonight for her. Same exact question. It depends on your intensity. One can advance very, very quickly, or it can take hundreds and millions of lifetimes. It depends on your intensity of your desire. There's no set time limit. One can achieve pure bhakti within a minute, or it can take millions of lifetimes, depending on your intensity of desire. It's up to you, Prabhu. How fast you'll achieve pure bhakti.
Why do we want to wait for millions of lifetimes when we have got a proper vehicle now?
I don't want to wait. I'm praying for pure bhakti every day. I'm begging Krishna for it. Begging, 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 begging. Pleading, bugging him like anything. So finally give it to me. All right, leave me alone. Stop bugging me. Now, here's pure bhakti. Yeah.
Like, will you know, like, when you get pure bhakti?
Huh?
When you get pure bhakti, do you know that you've got pure bhakti?
Do you know it?
Yeah.
Of course. That's described in the Bhagavatam. You don't know that verse? Bhakti pareshanu bhavavaraktir anyatra chai shatrika eka kalaha. That means that devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from all material things occur simultaneously for one who is sincerely practicing the bhakti yoga system, just as nourishment, eradication of hunger, and satisfaction occur increasingly with each bite for one who is engaged in eating. So just as by eating, you know that you're becoming satisfied. I don't have to tell you, your belly is getting filled up. Chiron. You know you're getting full. I don't have to tell you, you see. I can come by and give you first, fine. Second's great. Third, all right. Fourth, no, you see. Because you're getting full. You know you're getting filled up. So in the same way that you know you're getting, your belly is packing the prasadam and you've had enough, you will also, in the same way Bhagavatam says, know that you're getting bhakti, because you will feel love for Krishna. And you'll become conscious of Krishna within every sight, within every sound, within every smell, within every sensation. You'll become aware how Krishna is everywhere. You'll actually feel and begin to perceive Krishna more and more in everything. And you'll become detached from all material sense gratification, because you're getting such a higher taste. You wouldn't want to come down to a lower platform of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It'd be unthinkable, you know. If you're eating, you know, prasadam, who would want some garbage? You know what I mean? So yeah, it's very real. You'll taste it. You'll experience it. When you actually, when the pure devotional service actually becomes awakened in your heart, it'll be just like the sun rising in the morning. Gyanena tutada gyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham adityam vajjyanam prakashayati tatpadam. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then that knowledge reveals everything, just as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Do you have a hard time recognizing the sunrise? Yes. So when the Krishna sun arises in your heart, the whole world will become illuminated. You'll see everything in it with enlightened vision. You'll know that pure bhakti sun is arising in your heart. You'll taste it. You'll relish the bliss of pure bhakti. So you had a question.
Just what you said now, another question for Tim. Like when you're doing service, for instance, at the temple, the time you're doing it, you're really relishing it. But then something small happens, the agitation or something happens, then you get covered over. And you get frustrated easily and stuff. Then is it...
He says when you're doing the devotional service, you feel very happy, but something little happens, then agitation comes in, and frustration comes in.
That means you're not very deep.
Yeah. So
you're just on the surface of bhakti.
So does it go drop by drop at least?
Does it go by drop or how? Drop?
The deeper you go into bhakti, the less you'll be disturbed by the influence of the modes of nature, you see. On the ocean, if you're near the surface of the ocean, you'll feel a huge influence of the waves. The waves are compared to the modes of nature. The depths of the ocean are compared to pure bhakti, you see. So the deeper you go, the less you'll feel the influence of the waves. And finally you get deep enough, there's no more influence. So if you're doing bhakti and you're feeling disturbance, that means you're not very deep in the ocean of bhakti. You're not deep enough. So that means what will take you deeper, that is Hare Krishna mantra. You have to focus on your japa and going more intensely into the names, you see. Taking shelter of the names. The names will take you deeper and deeper and deeper into that ocean. And you finally get so deep that you become completely impervious to any kind of disturbance. It won't even phase you at all. You'll be so transcendentally situated. Nothing will phase you anymore. You can face fire and keep a cool head, you see. All right.
I just wondered why this emphasis placed on becoming free from material distresses, like in the first characteristic of devotional service, when devotional service is supposed to be free from motivation and free from the concept of liberation, or becoming free from suffering.
So what's your point, Devi?
Point is that why we are stressing so much.
The first characteristic of devotional service,
why you are stressing so much of becoming free from stress,
the material
distresses and all that.
So you're thinking that's a material
Because devotional service is without motivation and without
devotional services, because devotional service is unmotivated.
Mm-hmm.
So why we are so stressing that we should become free from stressing the...
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact is you do become free from all kinds of material stress. But those who actually are absorbed in pure devotional service, this is not the reason they're doing it. In fact, they're willing to take on even more material distress if they can... By so doing, they can please Krishna. That's a good point. The gopis are famous for that. You probably know that pastime. That Krishna had a headache. Everyone know that pastime. Krishna had a headache. You know that pastime. Krishna had a headache, and he said, he told his servant, I need the dust from the feet of my devotees to cure my headache. And the servant said, okay. So he went out looking. He came to some smarta Brahmins. He said, oh, Krishna needs the dust from the feast of his devotees. Can you give some dust? They said, what? Are you crazy? If we give the dust from our feet, goes on Krishna's head, we will go to hell. We would never do such a thing. So he said, okay. So he went down the road further. He met the gopis. He said, oh, Krishna has a headache. He needs the dust from his devotees' feet. Immediately he said, yes, yes, take. And he was amazed. They were so willing to give the dust from their feet when he heard from the Brahmins that would be a great offense if it sent one to hell forever. He said, aren't you afraid of going to hell by giving the dust from your feet? But Krishna is going, Krishna's head. They said, that's all right. We don't care. We just want Krishna's headache to become cured. So that's a good point, you brought. A devotee is willing to take all kinds of material distress if he can please Krishna by doing so. He's not averse to material distress anymore. But you know what? In that state of mind, there is no distress. Because if distress itself becomes a source of increasing ecstasy, then there is no material distress for that person, you see. Kunti was begging for more distress. Vipada shantu tattashvat tatra tatra jagad guru bhavanam darshanam yatsad apanarbhava darshanam. My dear Krishna, please give me more stress. Because when I'm completely overwhelmed with stress in this way, I can do nothing but take shelter of you, and when I take shelter of you, I will no longer see the repetition of birth and death. Kunti was pleading and begging, please give me stress. Please overwhelm me with so much distress that I can do nothing but take shelter of you. You see, so in that state of mind, there is no such thing as stress. Stress is experienced as the greatest blessing of Krishna. So there's really no contradiction. It's just a matter of understanding what is the practical application of how to actually enter into the mood of pure bhakti. If one thinks, oh, I'm so distressed, I have to get out of it by taking a pure bhakti. Well, that's called a material motive, actually. As Krishna points out, Chaturvedha bhajante mangjana sukriti narajana artojagasya artarti jnanicha bhadatarashabha. O best among the bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service to me, the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is seeking knowledge of the absolute. So Prabhupada explains, these are not pure devotees. So it's a very good point you made, Manaji. That if one is thinking, I have to do devotional service to get free from stress, it's not pure devotional service. It's not. It's motivated. I'm in distress, I want to get out of it, so I'll approach Krishna. But it's pious. It's a very pious thing to approach God for relief instead of, you know, liquor or some drugs or something like that, or sex pleasure, or television, you know, some mundane diversion to try to get rid of it. It's very a pious thing if you approach Krishna to relieve that. And by approaching Krishna, you become purified and you can eventually achieve pure devotional service. So even if someone has that, we encourage someone, all right, come to Krishna consciousness, become free of all distress. And once we get here, we tell them, well, now that you're here, you're getting some relief. Understand this higher principle that even the devotee doesn't even care about it anymore. He just wants to make Krishna happy. But the insider secret is here, this. As soon as you're completely dedicated, every thought, word, and deed to making Krishna happy in all times, all places, and circumstances, when you please Krishna, what happens to you? You automatically become pleased unlimitedly. Because Krishna experiences unlimited pleasure, and the devotee also experiences unlimited pleasure when he's fully doing everything, fully for Krishna's pleasure and satisfaction. So automatically, the devotee does become free from all kinds of distress. But if that's his motive, he won't become free from material distress completely. It's only when he gives up the desire to be relieved from distress and simply thinks how to relieve Krishna from his distress, you see, then he becomes free. As long as I'm thinking I have to be free from my distress, I'm still self-centered. I'm not Krishna-centered. But do I think I have to relieve Krishna from his distress? And I'm totally thinking only of Krishna. Krishna's being relieved from his distress. You see, being made happy in all ways. That's when my distress goes away. When I stop worrying about my own stress, my own suffering, and just think about pleasing Krishna. Does that make it clear? Yeah. Very good point she's made. Very intelligent point. Yes.
You're talking with Christian about if you know if you're a pure devotee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering why is it that it's spoken about how that a pure devotee doesn't see himself as a pure devotee?
Yeah, it's an interesting point because we hear both things in the scriptures. The pure devotee thinks himself to be the most despicable, low-class rascal demon in the history of the universe. And at the same time, it does seem contradictory, doesn't it, from a mundane viewpoint. Of course, we know it's not contradictory. But how it can be so, that's this now we're in the realm of philosophical speculation again. It's a very interesting question. I've never really been asked that question before, I don't think. It's a new one for me. And it's really, we can try going into it a bit and analyzing it. It's a very interesting question. I've thought about it, but I knew it was an issue. I knew that was, you know, an apparent issue. But I never really tried to analyze it in any depth. But now I have an opportunity to do so. So how is it that the pure devotee can actually understand that his love of Krishna is awakened, at the same time feel that he has no love for Krishna whatsoever? That's a very interesting question, because both emotions are there in a pure devotee. He factually experiences love of God, at the same time he feels himself completely bereft of love of God. A good example in this connection is the Goswamis of Vrindavan. There's a prayer that they used to say, Hey Radhe Rajadevi Ke. Hey Radhe Rajadevi Ke Chalalite. Hey Nanda Suno Kutaha. Shri Govardhana Kalpa Paraka Kale Kalindivane Kutaha. The Goswami is just like the thief is looking for He was looking for the jewels. The Goswamis were also wandering around Vrindavan looking for Krishna. Even though they were experiencing Krishna, they were pure devotees, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, who could see Krishna within their hearts and see Krishna everywhere. They preferred the mood of Vipralamba, of feeling, I haven't seen Krishna, I want to see Krishna. Here's a mundane example. It's very mundane, but it's actually a good example. Just like a boy and a girl, they're in love, you see. Now, whenever they get together, it's great, you know, they're so happy, they have their loving relationship, you know, they do this and that thing together. And they express their loving feelings to one another in so many different ways, you see. But what about when they're separated, you know, the boy has to go off to school somewhere, the girl goes off, and they write love letters to each other. The love they express when they're separated is much more intense and much more powerful, you know, heavy-duty, loving expression than when they were together. So the separation actually increases the loving feeling. So therefore, this can help us to understand this question. The devotee, even though he's feeling completely love of God, by feeling himself totally bereft of love of God and hankering for it, that actually increases the feeling of bhakti. So in this way, even though he's feeling bhakti, he actually relishes entering into this mood of feeling that I am totally lacking in bhakti and desperately feeling that I'm the most fallen, most despicable person in the whole existence. And how desperately I'm needing bhakti, therefore, in Krishna's mercy. So it is actually a mood which increases the bhakti. You understand? The mood of being completely bereft of bhakti is a means of increasing the bhakti. So there's the answer.
Isn't it one's humility, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is humility.
Humility is one of the aspects to attain Krishna also?
Yes. That way he never becomes proud. Trinadapi sanichina tararapi sahishnina amaninena kirtaniya siddhahari. In this way. Yes, the devotee thinks himself lower than the star in the street. In this way, this humility is very good. He gives all respect to others without expecting any respect for himself. In such a state of mind, he can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. That's a fit. It's a good point.
Is it because you're fully satisfied?
Nothing else bothers you? Tell me again.
When you're fully satisfied, then things don't bother you.
Because
you say that if you are fully satisfied, then nothing bothers you.
Yes, that's right. If you're fully satisfied, then you're always happy no matter what happens. That is called Krishna consciousness. You're completely satisfied. You're never disturbed. That is Krishna consciousness. Any other question? We're probably maybe getting a little disturbing here by going too long with this talk. Everybody's thinking, when is Prashadam anyway, you know? So anyway, you've heard very, very nicely, and the children also have heard very nicely. I especially want to thank the children.
Special treat for the children.
Them again?
We have a special treat for the children.
We do?
Yes.
All right, what is that treat for the children? Oh, okay. Mahaprasadam. Okay, we'll stop here with the discussion. Nectar devotion ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.